very happy to be here today, and also I want to thank everyone for organizing it in such a way that we could also have, we have three of my regulars here on Zoom, and all the chevra over here, so we have, this is like an overlap between Har Nof, Katamon, and HaGefen in Efrat. So if there's any delay in the way you hear my voice, Rabbi Osai, blame it on the Germans. Just kidding. Apparently my voice goes to Germany and then it comes around back to Israel.
And then back to the German colony.
Back to the German colony, yes. These chevra from the German colony. Oh, John, by the way, regards from your son-in-law, Dov. I was hoping to get his bracha this morning in Reshit Dagancha, his Birchas Kohanim. As it turns out, he's leaving Dagan the day before I come to Dagan, so we won't overlap. Okay. At the beginning of Masechta Ksubis, which some people, anybody here learning the Daf Yomi? Yeah? Oh, so great. So you're familiar with the first Mishnah in Ksubis that says, Besula Niseis Liyom Harvi. And she gets married on a Wednesday. And the Gemara takes this halacha of the Mishnah onto a different path. Obviously, in and of itself, the Mishnah is saying something significant, that they established that a woman for a first marriage should be married on a Wednesday. And the Mishnah explains why. But one of the repercussions of that halacha, just sort of like on the side, but the Gemara makes such a big deal about it, is called Hagas Zman. Let me explain what Hagas Zman means. In the old days, maybe we'll just move this bottle of water here so I could see Avi. Oh no, I can't see Avi. Anyway, see his name at least. Hi, Avi. Hey, there you are. Okay. In the old days, they used to separate the first stage of marriage, which is Erusin, from the second stage of marriage, which is Nisuin. And they gave a woman, generally speaking, a full year, a whole year of 12 months to prepare for the wedding.
Was that the reason? Very practical?
Probably that was the reason. Now, it seems strange to you and I that it would take a full year for a young girl to prepare for the wedding. So that has to do with the sociology of that time. In fact, if you look in Megillas Esther, you'll see it took 6 months to prepare for the first round with Sheshkaz and so forth. Then another 6 months, you know, they really did a lot of cosmetics there. I don't think we have today, you know, what are the famous cosmetic companies today?
But I think
today,
they were making sure she had no disease. There wasn't.
I don't think
they
were preparing her for 6 months.
Yeah, 6 months.
It's not like that's a year.
Yeah, they were Tommy Kim, right? Tommy Kim, yeah. What's the name of that famous company? Howie, can you help me out here? Labyrinth? What's it called, that famous company that produces cosmetics?
Revlon.
Revlon? It's a multi-billion dollar enterprise.
It takes about 15 years.
Revlon just fired.
No, but those days, that's what it's really for disease.
Oh, yeah? Sorry to hear that.
Unusual illness. That was the
Do you remember Avon? You remember Avon calling?
Ding dong.
Ding dong, Avon calling.
What Jehovah Witnesses?
I'm thinking to myself, you know, even in our contemporary society, so many millennia after the Gemara, after the Mishnah, some women will not leave the house, no matter what urgency, without putting on their cosmetics. You know?
But I think the real reason was to make sure she didn't have an illness. Certainly, in the days of Ahasuerus, the king doesn't want to mess with a girl who has any number
COVID
of diseases. Yeah. So you're waiting a year to make sure she
make sure no COVID.
Something in the name. Very much been waiting a year. Incubation periods are usually between 5 to 15.
Well, when they came, you get to make absolutely
okay.
Sure. She's also
so I'm going to swing back to our sugya for a moment with your
issues. 10 days before.
What happens at the end of this 12-month period? If all things are ideal and the system works without any glitches, and it's smooth, the program goes smoothly, at the end of the 12 months, exactly on that day, 12 months later, they have the chuppah. But what happens if there's a delay? Now the nafkamina here, the difference is going to be with regard to mizonos. The law is that once a man takes his wife into the chuppah, from that moment on, he has to support her. And half of Masechta Ksubis revolves around this issue of how to support her, how much to support her, what if she's used to a higher standard of living than he is, or vice versa. That's called mizonos. So that's a word that, again, if we had a whiteboard, I know we have one over there, I'm just too lazy if somebody wants to write the word mizonos there. So that's what happens. So the halacha is...
Is that an example that's different today? Or is it the same today?
I think it should be, in theory, it should be the same today. The Again, it depends whether you want me to give the shiur or to go off on millions of tangents. I don't know what the style is here in this space, because this is a real tangent. The Gemara says that there's a quid pro quo relationship between mizonos and maisi yodeh, which means that if a woman has wages, she gives him her check at the end of the month, and he has been paying mizonos. And it's quid pro quo. So the Gemara says that if a woman decides, you know, she's making more, let's say she's a psychiatrist, she gets, what is it, $500 per sitting? I don't know. Maybe it's twice that amount. Anyway, so it's worth more for her to take her wages and put it in her own bank account than to have him support her. He'll have to pay $250,000 to support her. She's making $500,000. So she says to him, "Eini nizonos v'eini osa." So today, in our modern society, there's a little bit of a less of an emphasis on mizonos than there was at the time of the Mishnah, because women today in contemporary life, as you and I know, are earning so much money that they don't even want the mizonos. They'd rather give up and forfeit and waive the mizonos in order to bring home their own wages.
I think if a kolo guy doesn't assume any financial responsibility, possibly.
All right. So I'm going to ask Rabosei, again, I don't know the rules of the game, I'm just getting to know you, if we could hold off a little bit, just like, this is just the introduction, we haven't even started the sugi yet. So that's what I want to say. So the introduction goes as follows. At the end of the 12-month period, as I said before, he starts supporting her. But what happens if there was no chuppah? So the question is, why wasn't there a chuppah? The Mishnah establishes later on a daf nun zayin, that's like 50 blot past the daf yomi today, so we'll come back in 2 months of that, that if he gives man velo nisu, then ochos mishalo, he has to support. That's it, period. We look at the clock, you know, we count out 12 months, the day it falls on that day, let's say it falls on a Sunday, he has to ready support. However, what happens if he delays, but not because of any reason of his own? Follow the following scenario. The Mishnah establishes that for first marriage, you get married on what day of the week? Who remembers?
Wednesday.
Excellent. However, 12-month period ended on a Sunday. He can't marry, you know, for the next 3 days. We've got to count Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and then he can marry her on Wednesday. He's perfectly ready and eager to marry her and bring her into the chuppah on Wednesday, but now it's Sunday. And she's saying, well, 12 months pass, you know, look at the clock, it ticked away, and you have to support me. But he's saying, wait a minute, I have to support you because we're entering into a marriage relationship. The Rabbanah and the rabbis have established I can't marry you. I have to wait until Wednesday. So in that case, everybody agrees, this is the only point in the sugya that's universally accepted, he does not have to give him his own. Why? Because when the Chazal established this law that he has to support her, they did it on the first possible occasion when they themselves, the rabbis themselves, would allow him to get married. So that was built into the original takana of Chiyuv Mizonos. However, what happens if it's a Wednesday and he gets sick? What happens if it's a Wednesday and she gets sick? What happens if it's a Wednesday and she is pierced in neither? She becomes in neither. And for a various number of possible reasons, there's no wedding that's going to happen, not because of some sort of a fault, which is called pshia, a negligence of his or hers, but simply because of extenuating circumstances. Those extenuating circumstances are called ones. Aleph, Vav, Nun, Sam. So I say this very slowly, and I write out the letters for you, because this is the key to the entire discussion for today. Where and how does halacha relate to ones? Now, the concept of ones comes from the Torah itself, and that's in Parshas Ki Tetzeh. There, the Torah describes a nara hamurasa, which is a married woman for our purposes, who is raped. Raped by another man. And the pasuk says, Vilanara losase dova, which in a rabbinic context will be interpreted thusly. We cannot impose any punishment whatsoever on her, even though this is a sexual relationship that's adultery on the highest level, but nevertheless she was totally passive. She was totally a victim of a crime. And that's what the Gemara calls ones rachmana patre, which means that the Torah alleviates a person who was onus, who was in a situation of circumstances beyond their control, from any punishment whatsoever. So the, you know, you'll find this in every legal system, but the real source of it is actually in the Torah itself. You know, many legal systems have built on this concept, but it really began with the Torah itself. The Torah is saying that a person who's a victim of a crime, even though that person participated to some extent, whether actively or perhaps passively, in that crime, in the criminal act, but nevertheless, onus rachmana patra. The Torah alleviates a person who's onus from responsibility. How would you say responsibility in the Lashon Kodesh, in the Holy Tongue? Achrayus. So again, we're suspending any achrayus because of onus. So we have like two concepts here. We have one concept called onus, another concept called achrayus, and they're mutually exclusive. Whenever we're going to apply onus, we alleviate you of achrayus. If there's no onus, then you are responsible, negligent, you are achrayi, you are responsible. So the Gemara now goes back and forth on this halach of higia zman v'lo nisu ochlos mishalo. The Mishnah establishes, as we said before, that if the 12-month period comes to a termination, and he did not bring her into the chuppah, nevertheless he has to support her, she begins to get support. And the question is, and the Gemara vacillates back and forth on this question, what happens in a case of onus? On this day, 12 months later, he was onus. Not because of the takonis chachamim of besula niseis liyom arvi, but because of the fact that he could not come to the chuppah. He was he's lying in a bed in a hospital, and you know, he had his feet up and something, you know, in a cast. I don't know what. You can dramatize the way you like. Or for that matter, he couldn't get there because she wasn't prepared. So you can't blame him for a situation when she wasn't prepared. She was ill. She was in need that she couldn't come. And that's the sugya back and forth. Okay. Having said that.
Is there any difference in could versus should? He doesn't have to support her, but maybe the Derech Eretz would suggest that he do that for a few days. Is there a difference there?
I'm not sure. I'll tell you why I hesitate, Bruce, although what you say is intuitively correct. In this case, I think we would shift the burden onto the father. What do I mean? The initial chiyuv mezonos of a young woman is incumbent upon a father. What we need to do is we have to remove that obligation from the father and supplant it with the obligation on the baal. But, you know, the baal has to be in a marriage situation. Marriage didn't take place, at least as far as chuppah, which is nisuin, it didn't take place. So the responsibility to support her is really on the father. Now, you know, you want to be a good son-in-law, you know, and create a good relationship with dad, you know, with my shver, as I called my father-in-law, may rest in peace. Well, that's a good thing, you know, it's always good. You might as well buy stock on behalf of your father-in-law if you think it's a good investment. But that's not it. You know, my father-in-law has to support my wife until she's my wife. Right now, she's not my wife. And therefore, if I'm not responsible for the fact that she's not my wife, the circumstances beyond my control, I don't know that I have to take it upon myself to alleviate my father-in-law for his responsibility, which is primary to support his daughter. Okay, getting back to our sugya. Comes along Rava, and he says the following. Again, we'll translate the words after we read the words of the Heiliger Rava, the Holy Rava. Rava says, Ule inyan gittin ain't okay. Ain ones begitin. So again, it could be that as far as mizonos is concerned, in the original sugya, we alleviate the husband from his obligation for mizonos because of onus. But, says Rava, in contrast, in the case of a get, onus is not a mitigating circumstance. What's the case of get? So the Gemara gives a number of different dramatic cases. We'll give what I think is the most dramatic of all cases. And a man gives a get to his wife with the following condition. Everything that we're going to discuss today is about conditions, about tanaim. He gives her with the condition that I'm going to give myself a 12-month period. I'm going out on a trip, let's say. I mean, this I'm filling in some of the missing lines here. And I hope to be back within the next 12 months. If I come back within the 12-month period, then the get is completely invalid. It's null and void. If I don't show up after 12, you know, at the end, by the sometime before or by the end of the 12-month period, this get is valid. The Gemara, we'll see soon, is going to try to give a little psychological explanation as to what motivates him, but that's premature for us. We're really interested in Rava right now. Rava is saying the following, Le'inyon gitin ein okein, ein ones begitin. What happened? He's coming back home to nullify the condition. What I mean by nullify the condition, to violate a non-fulfillment of the condition so that the get will be completely invalidated. Do you follow? So he's on his way back home, and on day 12-month period ending, he's on the other side of a bridge. All he has to do is cross the bridge, and the get is null and void, because the get would only be chal if the tanai was fulfilled, and the tanai was im lo basi, if I don't come. He's about to come, nullify the get, and resume the marriage.
Biden came instead.
And what happened?
Biden came.
A Biden came. Excellent. In a contemporary sense, you would say Biden came and there's too much traffic. I live in a neighborhood now called Har Nof for the next month, and I can tell you about the traffic in Har Nof. They're building a rakevet. It's impossible to get in and out of Har Nof.
Is this get left with the Beitin or with the woman?
So what happened was the bridge broke down. The man comes running into Beitin and he says, Chazuda soy, Chazuda soy. I'm here, I'm here. In Yiddish we'd say, Ich bin du. I'm here. I can't cross the bridge because the bridge is broken. But if not for that, I would be here on time to nullify the get. And Rava says, Ein ones begitin. We will not allow this get to be nullified by his yelling and screaming and proclaiming, I'm here, Chazuda soy, Chazuda soy. Which means that Rav is saying, Lamaisa, after all is said and done, did he come within the 12-month period? Did he show up? He wasn't there. And therefore the condition was fulfilled. Why wasn't he there? Because the bridge broke down. Because of an onus. Because of situations beyond his control. And that should be a mitigating circumstance. We saw that the Torah says, "V'la naral osas adover." We're not going to hold her responsible for a rape situation when she was not in any way negligent or in any way causing the criminal act to have taken place.
So even if both the husband and wife would like to cancel this get, the Beitin will not allow it to get canceled?
Correct. And here the Gemara asks why. What is the thinking of Rava? So Rava says the following. You know what? The Torah considers it onus. If we left things well enough on the biblical level, according to scriptures, then the get would be completely null and void. Why? Because the kiyum atnai, the fulfillment of the condition of lo basi, of not coming, was ba'onus. And the Torah doesn't consider onus. Onus is not considered valid. However, we can't allow this to go on. Why? Because of two groups of women, one are called the tsnuos, we'll explain, and the other are called the prutzos. In such a case, the tsnuos are going to say, you know why he didn't come? Not because he wants to validate the get, but because he was onus. And these women will be agunos, they'll never get married, because they're always afraid. It's what the Israelis call this nervin. Have you ever heard that phrase? No? It's an idiomatic phrase, my kids use it all the time. Nervin, you know, nervous tension. She's going to have nervin. She's going to think, you know what? He was on his way, and there was a storm, and the plane couldn't land. And therefore, she's going to think that really he wanted to be mevatel to get. He was onus, and she'll never get married. Then there's another group of prutzos. The prutzos are going to say that really he could have made it, and the get is valid because he deliberately didn't come back. But in truth, he was onus. So in order to avoid all these possible scenarios of tsnuos and prutzos, Rava said they established that ein ones begitin. We're going to establish on a rabbinic level that the get is valid. Even though the Torah would say the get is not valid because the kiyum atnai was ba'onus. Ein ones begitin. So according to that approach, again the Gemara offers another transmission of what exactly Rava was saying. The Rabbanan are making a get into a get when on a Torah level the get is not a get. How can you do such a thing? The Rabbanan are going to allow this woman to get married when the get is not a get because the Kiyum HaTanai was bonus. So many of the Rishonim here will invoke another principle, which is another hour's discussion, called Afke Inu Rabbanon LeKiddushin Mineh, that sometimes the Rabbanon will annul retroactively the original marriage. I mean, that's pretty revolutionary, you know, that the Rabbanon have the power to do so, and the Gemara is going to go back and forth. How do they have the authority to undermine a marriage and disqualify it when the Torah recognizes the marriage is valid? But be that as it may, Rava's bottom line is Ein Onus Begin. And therefore, even though he's yelling, Chazuda Soy, I'm here, and I really want to be Mavatal the Get, and Mavatal the Tanai, nevertheless, the Get is valid. That's Rava.
I mean, he can't have an agent on his behalf like himself who manages to cross the water, can swim across, and say, I'm his agent, I'm here, and I just can't.
I don't think so. Agency works not for Kiyuma Tanai, but for the actual Maisa, the original Nesina Saget could be subject to Shlichus, but not comedy or non-comedy. All right. Now, what I tried to send you in the WhatsApp was a little bit of an essay here. From what's called the Otzer HaYunim in the back. It's a very long, extensive essay. Goes on and on and on. Roughly about 10 pages of small print. But we're going to focus on some of the paragraphs here and see what we can accomplish. Now, let me just ask you a technical question. Is it meaningful for me to tell you where I'm reading from? Are you able to follow in the text? Yeah, Arthur, you can? Okay, for Arthur, then we'll do it. And if anyone out there has the WhatsApp, you can open it up. Gentlemen, I think you have it, right? Steve, you have it, right?
And what is
the pages? I think. I hope.
The two pages. The first one starts with Tanat Ones Begita.
When is this?
Correct.
When is this written?
Oh, this, I think Masifta was published, I think, about 15, 20 years ago. Yeah, this is really contemporary. And they did an extensive amount of research. It's really mind-boggling how much work they put in. I mean, this is just one article of many, many articles. And as I said, it's 10 pages long, of which we'll probably cover today about 3 paragraphs out of 10 pages.
Can a person do today
like scary
what you're talking about? Can a person give a get on it tonight?
Absolutely.
Would there be any changes for the whole technology that we have?
Yeah, I suppose. But you know,
for example, living there,
it's a war.
Might be taken as
exactly. You took the words out of my mouth.
You're going to give a get.
That excellent. That's going to be a get all tonight.
You know that the person,
in the case of a war, what's going to happen is the man, you're listening, Bruce, because this is mamish, exactly what you're looking for, a contemporary application of the halacha. A man goes out to war today. He's going to give a get to his wife and on the Tanai, and he's going to say, if I don't come back from the war, maybe he'll say, if I don't return in the next 2 weeks, and whatever he decides, then this get should be valid.
So I was told,
in the case of a Kohen, that's just disastrous, because, you know, if a Kohen divorces his wife, he can't remarry.
We were told the idea of, in fact, doesn't do it officially, because they don't want soldiers being depressed.
So you're worried about the psychological
component of doing it as an official thing is not done universally. You want to try to do it.
Right.
And also causes problematic for Kohanim.
Yeah, it's really bad news for a Kohen. You're a Kohen, Howard, right?
No,
who's a Kohen? Oh, you're a Kohen, Bruce. Yeah, no, I mean, this is really rough. Oh, somebody's saying, that's my friend.
I have a question to ask you.
Yeah, so let's give me a few more minutes and let's hold that question, because otherwise we won't get to first base. I apologize. Okay. So if you look inside in the text here, in the Masifta, he writes, HaGemara hevia tanidon legabei chiyuv mizonot be'egos man. Right, where do you have to support his wife at the end of the 12-month period? Kishemachmat ones humukav milisa. When there are circumstances beyond his control that prevent him from marrying. Hayim chayav b'mizonot. L'loshan arishon u'patur, l'loshan asheni, yesh b'zeh kamas feikot. Omar Rava, that's where we really want to start. Kol zeh le'inyan chiv mizonot ba'agot zman, avol begitin, dahainu bi'odom anotein get al t'nai, ulebasof nitkayem ha'tnai le'onso. So the fulfillment of the t'nai was against, you know, was compelled, circumstances that were beyond his control. But ze ein tanas ones, lachshivo ki ilu lo nase dover, as if he didn't do anything, meaning he decided not to count. El aget chal, the get is valid. Lam rocha haya ones. Vishuv miviag mara loshen sheni. This is the second alternative transmission of Rava. Hasovish Rava Amar Shigab Begitin Yesh Tanis Ones Ki Lo Nase Dov Vena Get Chal. That's the second wish. Umeviyah Gemara Lekach Kavarayot In Begitin Yesh Tanis Ones Or Ein Tanis Ones. The Gemara is going to vacillate back and forth with proofs this way and the other.
This is unique to get, as opposed to a rental contract, we don't pay until
So that's what we're going to see in the next paragraph here. Yeshna sugya nosefet. Do you have that? So you're skipping to paragraph number 4. This is a Gemara in Masechet Nedarim on Daf Chav Zayin. Maaseh ba'adam, a story of a person. We're going to give that person a description. He's what you call a plaintiff. Shahayu lo tvias mamon al chaver. He has lawsuits against his friend. So we'll call him Reuven. Reuven is the plaintiff. And he is claiming against Shimon. Shimon is the defendant. V'holach mimkomo. And Reuven, the tovea, meaning the plaintiff, had to go on a trip. V'amar, and he declares before he goes out, Im lo achzor ad shloshim yom, if I don't return within 30 days, yisbatlu kol tviosai, we might say I'm dropping my claim. None of my claims and none of my proofs and none of my documents are valid. Now this operates based on what's called hodas paldin kimea edudom, meaning as a plaintiff I have the right to drop my claims if I so desire. And he's saying, if I don't show up in 30 days, you know what? I'm dropping my claims. Ulabasoflo ba. He didn't show up. Why? Machmat ones. Right? The bridge broke. So he's yelling, Chazuda soy, I'm here. But the bridge broke.
Why would he drop his claims? What's the advantage?
What's
the problem if he doesn't?
Yeah, I think what's happening here is that Bezdin will give a person a certain tvach of zman. You know, you can't keep, again, one of the faults of our modern system, I think, is that, I don't know what the law is in any country, probably changes, but there's a certain, like, law, statute of limitations, so to speak. You know, at some point or other, Bezdin says, we're dropping this case.
Okay, so he allow Bezdin to drop the case whenever the time period.
I understand. So I'm just saying that there is a motive.
Unless they assign responsibility for him to pay for the other side's costs.
Right, there may be others, you know, other fees that he doesn't want to get involved in, and basically he's saying, I'm dropping the case. But again, that's because he doesn't show up. Now, he didn't show up. But why didn't he show up? Because the bridge broke down. So the Gemara deals with this question in Masechet Nedarim. And the Gemara quotes a machlokes, a controversy between Rabba and Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, Afal pi shehoya onus, even though the bridge broke down, but he didn't show up. He wasn't there within 30 days. Is therefore tviosa betelos. His claims are completely null and void. In other words, the t'nai that he made was fulfilled. He did not show up. For Rabba, cholak al kach, he descends. The Omar, she'ein tviosa betelos, sharehu onus. And again, the Gemara is going to bring all the proofs back and forth to try to establish whether a person is allowed to claim onus. So in the case of get, he's claiming, the husband is claiming onus, and therefore the get is not valid. In the case of Batlu Tviosov, he's claiming that I was onus, and therefore my my documents and my proofs to support my claim are still alive, active, and running, right, and valid. And the Gemara goes back and forth.
Can he refile the claim?
No, not with those proofs. Maybe he can come up with other proofs. But not with those documents.
That was the documents he submitted.
Correct. Those documents, if you hold, let me just get the calculation right. If you hold Ein Tainus Ones, that we're not going to accept his claim of Ones, then the documents are null and void. He can no longer use those documents. Now, Arthur's asking, what if he comes up with new documents, or he invites another pair of witnesses to testify in his behalf?
No, a lawyer would advise him, if you're going to limit yourself like that, say in the document, unless I can't get them because of
excellent.
Beyond
excellent.
Control. Which Bruce, the husband should have given the first
If you would also. Allow me to give you a hug, I would give you a hug. Why? Because exactly what you said, the Gemara says in Masechta Nedarim. Okay, so pat yourself on the back. You could have written the Gemara yourself. What does the Gemara say? The Gemara differentiates between two types of onus. One is called onus de shchiach, which means that it's foreseeable. Again, it might be 10%, it might be 5%. The Gemara doesn't reduce it to percentages. But you know what? Bridges break down. And then the Gemara has another case called an onus de lo shchiach. Arthur, you want to help me with that? Because I can't see it.
No, it's okay.
Okay.
That's me.
What's onus de lo shchiach? So let's say, for example, a war breaks out. We had no reason, rhyme, to predict that, anticipate a war would break down. Or, let's say, for example, a woman has what's called a veses kavua, which means that she has an internal biological clock, and she will see her nidus exactly, almost to the day, you know, she can predict it. And then, all of a sudden, in the middle of a month, parsa nida. So that would be a case of onus de lo shchicha. If a man finds himself nebuch in a hospital room, you know, with his 2 feet up in a cast, that's onus de lo shchiach. And the Rishonim go to town here. We're going to explain one shita, and we'll leave out for the time being the other shita. I just want to get the names right, if you give me a second, so I don't confuse us as we go along. I believe what I'm about to say is the Rosh Hashita. It should be on... just 1 second, sorry. Okay, I'm going to apologize. I'm assuming I'm right. If my memory serves me right, it's the Rosh Hashita. And the Rosh says the following. And this is exactly what Bruce was saying just 2 minutes ago. If it's an onus de shchiach, and he's claiming, I didn't fulfill the tanai because I was onus, we're going to turn the tables back to him. We're going to say to him, why didn't you make the tanai and add one single word? Im lo basi mirtsoni. If I don't come because I deliberately decided not to come. If it's an onus de lo shchiach, then...
How would you know his intention?
What we're saying is that...
Because the bridge is out doesn't mean that he didn't have in mind not to show up.
But how do you measure intent?
Yeah, that's the same question, basically.
Yeah, what we're saying is the following, that if he should have considered the possibility that he won't be able to come, even though he wants to come, he should have formulated his condition in an appropriate way. When a person formulates a condition, he does so in a very meticulous way. This is a condition that's going to either, you know, validate his get to his wife or invalidate his get. It's either going to give him rights to make a claim for $1 million in a lawsuit or lose and forfeit $1 million. So be careful about the way you... If, you know, an onus happened that was totally unforeseen, the way the Rosh understands the Gemara, then we're not going to say to him, well, you should have formulated it this way or that way. But if it was a foreseeable onus, then in a sense, you dug your own pit. You, by not taking care and adding that one word, lirtsoni, imlobasi lirtsoni, yeheget, or imlobasi lirtsoni, yehetviosav mivutolos, then he is expanding the meaning of his tnai to include even a case of onus. Because if he wanted to exclude the case of onus, he should have done so. So in a sense, what the Rush is applying here is the law of umdana. What is umdana? Again, I'd have to write that on the board. But umdana is a universal principle that we begin to look at the circumstances and come up with a hashara, with an evaluation, an estimation of what really was going on over here. And that's called umdana. Now the other approach is going to be...
Can I ask a question?
Yeah. Okay, guys, you'll have to help me here. Yeah.
The thing is... when somebody is in the war, you don't give a get to your wife, because when she passes away, she gets $10,000. So why would she give her a kid so she won't be able to get the money?
Right. Okay. So you.
I know how it is in Israel, but in
yeah, you won't give a get to your wife. But in the Gemara's time, they were worried about something called aguna. A person did not want to leave his wife in a situation where, if heaven forbid, he doesn't return from the army, from the war, from the battle, and we can't identify his body, as we learned in Masechta Yevamos, then she can't get married. We need two witnesses to find his body, and within 72 hours of his death, and there are so many conditions, and they have to see, you know, the eyes and the cheeks and the mouth and the nose and so forth and so on. So he gives a get to his wife. And he says to his wife, you know what? If I come back within a certain period of time, then the get is null and void. If I don't come back, then the get is valid.
I'd like to think the Beit Din would advise him appropriately.
I think in that case, you're talking about the rabbinate today. Let's leave out the rabbinate today. But I think back in the day, that it was almost standard practice that when a man went out to battle, he gave a get to his wife. That's the whole story of Uriah Achiti, the Gemara about David and Bathsheba.
Give me the statement about the appropriate words he should use so it's going to work properly. He should advise him.
But again, we're not talking about that case. We're talking about a case where a man decides that he's going to be mevatel his tvios, and he's going to drop, you know, waive his claims and so forth and so on.
Yeah, but if he gave a get, he didn't show up in time. Then why simply can't he can't the woman say, if she wants to be divorced, well, he didn't show up on time, not my problem.
Correct.
I don't know what he had intended.
Correct. And that's going to be a case where Rav is going to say, ein onus begitin. She's holding on to a get. He didn't show up. I'm out of here. I'm getting married tomorrow. Because ein onus begitin. Which is, again, the first Lishna, the first transmission of Rava, and Enos Begitin. You didn't show up, you didn't show up.
But you could have a situation where he doesn't show up for whatever reason. He's incarcerated, for example.
Correct.
And she gets remarried, and then he shows up and says, I didn't have that in mind, I wanted to be there.
So once we get into Umdana, you know, you're really playing with fire. You know, it's a very dangerous situation.
Rabbi?
The only thing is, I'm just wondering if I'm not sure you what are the rules of the game here? You got to help me out here. Can we leave the questions out until a little bit? How much time do we have? We still have 10 minutes.
Yeah, all questions, please hold to the end.
So let's just try again. It's a little bit of a complicated sugya, so I apologize. Okay. So now, Rashi says here in Masechta Ksuvos on Daf Gimel, Dibra Maschil Midoraisa, that Matsinu Tainas Onus Minatora. Rashi wants to explain that when Rava says Ein Tainas Onus, that's a rabbinic institution. on a Doraisa level, according to the Torah law, Matsinu Tainus Onus. The Torah considers Onus. It's a very important claim, and it's a valid claim. Shenemar Vilanara Lo Sasa Dofer. So again, if we go back to the Doraisa Locha, then Yesh Tainus Onus Begitin, and according to the second Lishnah, Rava is saying Yesh Tainus Onus Begitin, and that's going to mess up the get. And the reason for it is, says Rashi, because of the pasuk Vilanara Lo Sasa Dofer. What's the case of Vilanara Lo Sasa Dofer?
Rape.
It's a rape situation. In this paragraph, which I find very profound, on the bottom right, he raises the following objection. I don't understand this Rashi. Vilanara Lo Sasa Dofer is a halacha in criminal responsibility. When a person is guilty of a crime, we ask the question, are they guilty or are they not guilty? And if the answer is ones, the Torah says, v'lanara lo sasa dover. The Torah is alleviating her of any criminal responsibility because she was onus. However, in the sugya that we're learning of Tanai, Tanai has nothing to do with criminal law. Tanai is a question of a person, you know, like when I was a kid, we called it silly putty, right? He can create a Tanai in whatever way he wants. It's kechomer b'yad yotzer. It's like clay in the hands of a potter. He decides when his get will be chal, when it won't be chal. What does this have to do with v'lanara lo sasa dover? The halacha v'lanara lo sasa dover is halacha nachrayus. Achrayus means, are you responsible? That's not going to give us a clue as to whether or not a Tanai that was fulfilled Bionis is considered a valid fulfillment of the Tanai, or no. That's not a valid fulfillment of the Tanai. He was onus. I'll read to you the language. It's very profound. He says, Hine yisod, this is on the bottom right of the first page, yisod aptur ba'ones, shepotu bionchim, right, which is the Doraisa halacha, is a din in, he calls it Shir B'maisa Adam. Al Eza Ofanim Nechshav Shamaisa Be'achri Yusov. Are you responsible for the action? Are you criminally liable for the action? V'yeshno Ofanim, there are situations in which the action was Lo Nasa Mirtsono. It wasn't done as a result of his will. L'fichach, therefore, Eino B'achri Yusov. He can't be held responsible when there was no will. Right? The machayev that generates the obligation and liability and culpability is will. You did it willfully, but if you have no achrayus, because it was an onus. But he says, Ein ze miyusar al eza hagbolo mitzad ha'odom shu mechavein verotze shebofen ze eino nechshav etzlo v'toris nasa dover. This has nothing to do with the question of when a person took a Tanai, did he have in mind that he would have to want to fulfill the Tanai? That's a whole different question, it's a whole different issue. Again, if you're arguing like the Rosh of Yesh Tainus Onus, then okay, so a person, you know, with umdana and circumstantial evidence, we may come to the conclusion that he meant to say, well, if I don't come because I don't want to come, because I've decided deliberately I don't come, but if I couldn't come because the bridge broke, that's not a call to Kima tonight. Again, we can analyze from now until doomsday, or the way Arthur said it, she received the get, she has a right to say, well, he didn't come, and so forth and so on. But there's no element of achrayus here. There's no element of legal culpability, of punishment. Halo poshet shalinyan onchim. If you're talking about onchim, that's one thing. You know, then you can talk about ones v'lanara lo sasa dover, and you can talk about yesh tanas ones shemafkia mimenu achrayus. Right? Who knows what the word mafkia means? To undermine, right? You undermine responsibility because he has a tanas ones. Again, that's in the moral realm of responsibility. Mitoch ha-sugya, muchach she-gam l'gabi kiyum t'nai. Nemra afka zu. We're going to undermine and neutralize his responsibility in Kiyama Tanai. He wasn't responsible for the Kiyama Tanai. There was no negligence or responsibility for his, you know, being Mekayim Tanai and not showing up. Well, what's the connection here? So I wanted to share with you an insight here of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. And this is on the second page. Again, I'm fast-forwarding. There's a lot of good literature in between. On the top left of the second page, do you see where it says Ofen Arishon? I don't know if you find that. Maybe we'll backtrack to the last paragraph on the bottom right. Right? I'm just curious. Do you have this? Because
yeah.
All right. So if you have it, then I'll refer to the text. He says, "Lashitas Rashi va'Rosh va'Tosvis." All this is in Masechta Nedarim. Rashi and Ausugin and the Rosh and Tosvis in Masechta Nedarim. Shegamu maskonas haGemara kayom tam shel ones rachmona patri. So we're going to accept now the opinion of Rabba in Masechta Nedarim. Then Rabba's opinion is that we're going to apply the principle of ones rachmona patri as far as kiyum atnai ba'ones. So if he was mekayim the tanai against his will, that's not called kiyum atnai. He says, tzorech bir bedover zeh. I'd like to understand what's going on. Bishlema bi'onshim v'chiyuvim. When you're talking about, I call it moral law or criminal law, and you're dealing with punishments, you're dealing with obligations and responsibilities, shebayim ala adam shalom midaito. And now we have a situation where he was responsible, but he wasn't really responsible because it was shalom midaito, it was against his will. Then shayach lepotro, it makes sense that we could alleviate him of punishment and responsibility. B'toras eino achroi. He's not responsible because it was done ba'onis. He was compelled to do it. Avol bi adam ha'ose chalos shetoli b'tnai. If you're talking about a person who's creating a chalos, chalos meaning a new effective change in the status of the law, like for example giving a get to his wife. So when he makes that chalos shetoli b'tnai, he says it should depend upon the fulfilling of tnai. Hare bi yado lahasnos b'chol ofen sheyirtzeh. It's in his hands to create the tanai in any way he wants. He's, you know, pay a good lawyer for this, but he can write the tanai with the small print, the conditions, in any way he wants. Ulefamim tole gam mitziyut misuyemet she'ena nasis lebesof l'ritzono. So sometimes he'll write a condition, and it's not totally in his hands to fulfill that condition. You know, maybe the bridge will break down. The ancient chisaron v'tainas onus bekach. We can't come along and say, well, how can you hold him responsible for it? Mipnei shebe'emes hamase v'atliyo v'kiyum atnai alo nasa mirotzen gomer. He was the one who decided that he wanted to create this tanai. Vasiyoso mirtzono v'daito hi apoleles es achalos. Everything that generates the validity or lack thereof of the get depends upon his ruts on his das. So then you start talking, well, did he want it to be this kind of tanai? Did he want it to be that type of tanai? What did he have in mind? Should he have added the word ritzono? You know, all these issues can go back and forth. But mashayach lomar b'zeh, you can't say Rashi of onus rachmona patre, that the Torah alleviated a person from responsibility in the case of onus. Just by a show of hands, how many people understood the question that's being asked? We won't appreciate the answer unless we appreciate the kasha. The ones rachmona patre that Rashi quotes here, in the case of ones b'tnai, seems to be totally off base. Rashi is sort of jumping from one world into another world, and the worlds never meet. One world is the world of moral responsibility, of punishments. And the other is the world of t'nai. Did he mean this in his t'nai? Should he have said this tonight? Why didn't he formulate it this way? Let's figure out what he had in mind. Did he mean that the get should be chal if he can't get there at the end of the 12 months because the bridge broke down? What did he mean? What are the ramifications or the limitations of the Tanai? You know, let's figure out what the Tanai is all about. And then we can ask whether onus constitutes a kiyum Tanai, doesn't qualify as a kiyum Tanai, but has nothing to do with onus rachmona patre, which is a principle that operates in the laws of criminal responsibility.
Before you end, you can tell me what I can say something.
Yeah, I'm almost ready for you. I forgot your first name?
Irving.
Right. I'm always ready for you, Irving. I just want to fit in one last point, which is on the top of the next column. And here in the Otzer Reunim, he does a tremendous amount of research, collecting and anthologizing all the different answers to this question. But the first answer is the one that just excites my mind, and that's the Kovet Shiurim. Just say a few short words about the Kovet Shiurim. Anybody know who authored the Kovet Shiurim?
It was Rabbi Chanan Wasserman.
Excellent, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. And how did he die, Rabbi Chanan? He was killed by the Nazis in the Shoah. He went back to Poland to die. It's an amazing story, and I honestly think about it all the time, and I still don't understand it. But that was his decision. He wanted to be with his Talmidim, knowing that they were just whatever. So whenever I say Torah in the name of Rabbi Chanan, I always add Zecher Tzadik VeKadosh Livracha. He says the following. Do you know what the Torah means, at least according to Rashi, by Onis Rachmana Patre? This Rebbe Chanan's new definition, we think it means we're alleviating him of responsibility because he was Onus and there was no Achrayus. No. What's Onis Rachmana Patre? Sheha Asiya bi Onis Eina Nechsheves Kasiya Shel Adam. It's a mind-boggling revolution. He's saying that, you know why a person is alleviated of punishment? What lies at the heart of it? What generates that halacha? It's that asiya bi'ones eina nechsheves kasiya shel adam. Is the get chal or not? If the get is chal, then she can't marry Cohen. If the get is not chal, then she can marry a Cohen when her husband dies. So I'm not sure what question you were asking, but again, Rabosai, listen carefully to what Rabbi Chanan is saying. We think of Asiya like, you know, if I take my camera and I take a picture of you, right? I take a picture of you. Woo! You did an action, right? If you don't believe me, I have it on camera, right? Security cameras. Name. That's not true. Not in a Jewish halachic sense. In a Jewish halachic sense, it's not enough to do an action physically, but rather the law has to relate that action to you. It's almost, again, my Rebbe would hit me over the head for saying this, but it's almost an existential concept. Rabbi Chanan is introducing something that belongs to the world of Descartes, the French philosopher six centuries ago. Right? Cogito ergo sum. Everybody knows. I think, therefore I am. Right? Everything is about consciousness. Everything is about intention. It's not correct and accurate to say that your actions are your actions. You can't just assume that because somebody did an action, it's his action. He's got to be connected to that action. He has to intend to do the action. The element of deliberate intention is critical. You know, let's say, for example, if a tree would fall, right? You remember the famous, there was a sound, but nobody could hear it, right? You know, so when there was no sound, you know what I'm talking about, right? What we're saying now is it's possible that Reuven did an action, but that action happened on its own. It wasn't Reuven who did the action. I mean, that's a revolution. And according to Rabbi Chanan, the legal halachic status of an action is defined by the pasuk v'lanaro lo sasedava. And Rabbi Chanan's understanding that if she was a victim, then that's not considered her action. Take, for example, we discussed earlier, Howie was with me, back in Dagan, we discussed the case of Yehari Bal Yava, right? For Gilia Rai, she has to give up her life. But if she's a rape situation or she's compelled, then you might argue that it's not her action. That's called Karka Olam. So the halacha doesn't automatically assume... we lost it. Why did we lose it? I do not know. Because it's not plugged in. Wow, that's disappointing. So I'm going to have to bring a chut ma'arich here.
Did you lose everything or just...
Yeah, it's called, my computer totally died.
It was still online.
Here. Right, no, I'm just... there were four guys here with me on Zoom. All right. See, I'm juggling two things now. Keeping up my teaching and coming here to Efrat.
Now, is that an onus shechiah?
Yeah, right. Now it's shechiah because now I understand what's going on. You know? So I'm just going
to
plug this in if you don't mind, and I'll be right back.
If the man dies, does the get work or not work? Because if he died, he can't get back to fulfill the get.
That discussion follows in the Gemara about that.
I remember that. I don't
because,
know.
Because somebody who's dead cannot divorce someone. I think there it depends on the question about whether the Tanai was written as in it being retroactive.
Right.
If it's effective retroactively or not. If the Tanai was written retroactively, then the get. I mean. I think that's what I remember.
Because his intention is to protect it from being an agreement.
Yeah.
That's exactly why he's giving this guy.
Right. Which is why he would have to write it to retroactive Lashon.
I hate to think you have to have a lawyer every time you have to do something.
There's a protection of the inheritance to his children.
Right. Right. In those days, the wife can inherit this. Right.
Yeah.
Complicated.
But if the action is required, if the action... The problem is, what if you commission Bezin to write a get conditions, and you sign it, you agree to it, made them sign it, but it's not exactly what you said.
Right.
The sofer didn't write. So, does that mean that if you had in mind something different?
Yeah, I don't have a practice case again. I suppose they can only measure your intention from the document that you write. How will they know? Otherwise, you can always say, oh, I didn't do that.
Yeah.
My lawyer did, but I didn't. Right. Yeah, you're going to do that. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
The question I have, and maybe you have, Joe. And you know, in the United States, if you die in a battle, there's a $10,000 policy that's automatically given to your wife. Why would you divorce your wife?
He said last time the reason you're divorcing your wife is in case they don't find the body. You may die. You may die. You may fall off a cliff. What if they never find the body?
Make a difference because the rabbis can make a takana that if it's not found in a year or 2 years, that automatically. You are divorced and you keep...
They could do that, but the halacha is trying to protect the woman just in case they can.
Unless you know the catastrophic event.
Just in case they can, yeah.
If there's no catastrophic event...
But that's the answer. Sometimes they can't. They're trying to protect the woman from being stuck. Because the guy can go off to China and never come back. And who knows what happened to him. And someone will say, you know, he died there, but there's no proof.
Done now,
yeah, the shear's over. Shear's over.
If rape is not by a... it's not considered pure, why can she bust it for a coin?
It was something that was...
I will have to send that to me, and I'll have to ask the rabbi.
Okay, so we'll just... I'm sorry, I apologize. I'm just trying to figure out the technology here, so... slowly but surely we'll... So again, I just want to read...
If rape is considered known as why she puzzled to the coin...
I guess because of something called tumah.
Turn the camera around, Bruce.
Right, that's called tumah. I'm just going to finish this, Rabbi Chana. I'll answer your question about Tumah.
My question was to Bruce, is that a woman who was raped by a non-Jew
right.
can't marry a Kohen?
So right. Because the Psul Kahuna has nothing to do with the Maisa. It has to do with what's called Tumah. But let me just finish Rabbi Chana so we could end the Shia, you know, in a Mesuder way. How do you say it? He says the following. What?
Organized
way. Shasiya ba'onis einen echsheves kasiya shel adam. Klomar, she'eno mityacheset elav. Right, there was an asiya, but it doesn't relate to that person as if that person had done the action. He calls it nases me'eleha. Right, it's like as if it happened by itself. Like I told you, like I gave the mashal of a tree that fell right out there. That's what happens. Kevin Shabala Bikfir, since the action was compelled, therefore it's considered like it happened Meilel. So let's try to understand that if Maisa Ba'onis Eino Nechshav Lasia, you know, it's even though Bimitzius the action was done, but it's not considered his action, then the Tanai was not fulfilled. Do you follow? And here we have to be very, you know, have to really think out of the box in a very abstract way. He said, in lo bossi, if I don't come. The kiyama tanai is lo bossi. The absence of coming is considered like a kiyama tanai in a positive sense.
It doesn't state reason, though.
What do you say?
Since it was an onus, he never did.
Say it again, Arthur, I'm sorry.
So that states reason he didn't show up. It doesn't, the
tanai itself doesn't say the reason.
Yeah, the document itself doesn't say. If I don't show up because of circumstances beyond my control.
He didn't say that. So therefore, like you said before, she's holding on to the get. He didn't show up. The get should be valid.
Right.
Comes along Rebbe Chanan and says, there was never a kiyama tanai. That's why the get is not valid.
Because the kiyama actually didn't come.
Exactly.
Because his not coming was not because of him. Because he separated between idea of actually him doing it and the action being done.
In other words, you need
he died overseas.
In order,
he doesn't show up.
But then you'll never know.
He didn't want to die.
You'll never know. You'll never know.
He didn't want to die.
Right.
So therefore, the get's not valid.
But
then, come on.
Well, then you come into the question of how the get was written, whether it was written retroactively.
Let's take another case. Let's say the man gives a get, and he says this get should be valid if I come. The exact flip it around. And then what happened is somebody actually brought him and at gunpoint said, you better come. Would that get be valid? Rebbe Chanan said, no, it's not valid. Why? Because it's not considered like he came. Why? But he came.
So then you're arguing that you can never force anyone to give a get under any circumstances. That's what you just argued. In other words, even if you make his life difficult and he wants to give it because his life is difficult, you're saying no.
If he was forced to give the get,
because
that's not
being forced to give.
That's
the get
not considered giving a get.
Because his parnassa is being affected, or anything else.
That was my question.
Not parnassa.
How far do you go? If I point a gun at somebody's head and said, "You got to show up at Bezdin and give a get," the gun isn't loaded. He doesn't know that.
Wait a second.
Yeah, but you know the justice.
You're hitting with too many things at once. Let's go with a simple case where he was forced to give the get at gunpoint, and there's a bullet
agrees.
In the gun.
And everyone agrees, right? Everyone agrees.
In that case, Rebbe Chanan is saying that even though the conditions for the get have been fulfilled b'mitzius. In the physical reality, right, he came, he gave the get, and he fulfilled the condition. Since he was onus, the Torah says onus rachmana patri, but not as a moral principle. Not because we're alleviating him of responsibility and achrayus, but because it's not considered his action. That's a whole new twist. If it's not considered his action, then the action that would have constituted a fulfillment of the tanai and validated the get didn't happen. Why? Because it's not his action.
But if he feels compelled, but no one else would agree that that's compulsion, he felt compelled. He really felt compelled. All in all, but no one.
I think Rabbi Chanan is arguing you need an objective onus. We have to consider it as an onus. It's not what he comes along and says, I was onus. If the bridge broke and he can't get across the water, that's considered a valid objective onus. And then it's not his maisa. I mean, again, there's another chiddush over here that ibia is considered like a maisa. Okay, but that's a whole other aspect of the sugya. Everything is tied together.
If he shows up late, does she have the right to refuse to get?
To what?
If she shows up late,
yeah.
Does she have the right to change her mind and refuse to get?
Well, wait a second. I don't want to get into another issue here, but she doesn't have to accept a get. Either the get is valid or not, whether she likes it or not. Because Isha Miskaresh is Bal Karcha. I mean, you could talk about Cherem the Rabbeinu Gershom and so forth and so on, but I'm just saying, the get will be valid whether she likes it or not.
Can he send a follow-up document? He understands the bridge is going to be demolished at the end of the month.
Too late. Can he send another document? No, that, he gave the get. The get will be valid unless we say Yesh Tainus Onus Beget. But Rabbi Chanan is being mechadish. Why would we say Yesh Tainus Onus? Rashi quotes the pasuk Anarol Sasidom. Mashayachud po. What's the kesher? Rashi is combining apples and oranges. There's no analogy.
It's the difference between a criminal suit and a civil suit.
Exactly. Right. And if his tanai is a tanai, then we'll operate with his tanai. But we're not going to introduce Anarol Sasidom. What does Rashi mean when he says Anarol Sasidom? Rashi is stretching his arm out to a different world, a different domain. Says Rabbi Chanan, you know why Velanazel Sasid Dover? Because it's not considered her action. And now we have a question, I'm not sure of names over here. Was it Avi who asked the question about a Kohen?
Yeah.
Avi, you asked an excellent question. What about a Kohen? I mean, if it's not her Maisa, so why is she Psula Lekuhuna? And the answer is there's something called Tumah. Not the same as Tumah when you come in contact with a corpse or with a sheretz, or if you're Zav Migufo and so forth and so on. It's a different concept of Tumah. It's kind of like, if you want to be philosophical about it, it's kind of like the Nachash HaKadmoni. You know, he had some sort of relationship with Chava, according to the Zohar, right? So that's Tumah. Tumah means that something physically took place. Not necessarily with an action of hers. It's just the physicality of the spirituality, of the reality of having a relationship with a God. Okay then, so let's just summarize, and we hope that none of these issues about Anarol Sasidover should come. But in Gittin, you know, we'd have to study the poskim to see how we paskin, but the Gemara vacillates back and forth, whether Yesh Tainus Onus be Gittin.
Can you answer why, if he sends up another document before the end of the get period, why that doesn't supersede and cancel the original get? And if everyone agrees about it, she receives it.
So that's what I think Howie was talking about before. I was torn with this whole business with my Zoom business. There's halacha of l'mafreya, meaning when a person gives a get, the get is going to be chal now if the condition is fulfilled. So I don't know. If he sends a shliach, that's a little bit more complicated. That's a sugya in Masechta Gittin. And if he wants to be mevatel the shliach, when the shliach is on his way.
No, then the answer is the get is actually now.
Yeah, the get is now, unless there's no kiyum atanai. And then the question is whether Yesh Onus Begitin and there's no kiyum atanai, or Einos Begitin and there is a kiyum atanai. Okay then?
All right.